The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Welcome back to another award-winning Kiefer and Curry show right here on Tony Curry Radio on the TKR app. Easy to download. Of course, just put those three little letters in, TKR on Android or Apple. You can hear our show at least 5 days a week on the TKR app. And of course, you can also hear us wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We're available on every major industry. And of course, there's also another great show called Need to Know. Kip Kiefer does every single week right here on Tony Curry Radio. And you can check us out on ABC 3340, 10:30 to 11 o'clock every single Saturday morning. Our plays have been unbelievable. As a matter of fact, between one of our celebrity guests and Case Kiefer, 13-0. You can go back and watch it for yourself. 13-0 on our picks this past week. So great stuff. We're going to talk some college football today, Kip. How you doing, brother? Everything good?
Hey, Tony, anytime we talk college football, I am exceptional. Thank you very much.
There you go. We're down in the nitty gritty. We're into week 13 for all due practical purposes. It's rivalry weekend. Of course, we got Oregon, Oregon State, and we got Auburn, Alabama. We got Michigan, Ohio State, and we're getting ready for the CFP and what they're finally going to say about the Final Four. We have Jordan Travis, of course, the quarterback for FSU, out. Are they going to make it in as an undefeated team? You'd think they would, but if they don't have their quarterback, should they allow it to be then? So I was looking back. And of course, I've been doing sports radio long enough to remember the coaches poll and the AP and the UPI and how we used to have split national champions. You know, I was sitting there watching that Washington game this past week and they hadn't started 10-0. The last time they did was 1991 and they were co-national champions. I was like, holy smokes, that's right. Washington won a national championship back in 1991, which doesn't seem like it was that long ago, but yes, it was 32 years ago. Then of course, in 1998, we decided to see if we can make it a little bit more scientific. We got the computers involved and we had the human element. We had this thing called the BCS, which of course I remember talking about it on Jocks doing our morning show, and a lot of people hated it. A lot of people loved it that we had a human element, but a lot of computers to it. Then, of course, in 2014, just 9 years ago, the CFP was born, the college football a playoff system. And of course, where we had 13 different people, we had people recusing themselves and they would have a 3-year track and then they'd be out after 3 years. And we had Condoleezza Rice, who was in the mix. And I mean, all these celebrities and different coaches and ADs, SIDs, I think for the most part back in the UPI and AP days, were actually doing the coaches polls. The coaches never were watching all these college football games. They were watching their own teams. You had the SIDs doing most of the voting for. And now, of course, coming in next season, we're going to have a true college football playoff system with 12 teams getting in, which I know a lot of people are super excited about. I do think it's interesting, like an LSU who's sitting number 14 right now has actually got three losses. Do we want a three-loss team in a college football playoff series? I don't know. And then I'm just wondering, since we're talking about all these different things, are we moving in the right direction when it comes to finding a national champion? Because obviously you can make an argument that, you know, the eighth team, the ninth team, the 10th team, the Tulanes, the Louisvilles, do they really have a shot? Will it evolve any further beyond our 12-team playoff system that will start next year? Not to get ahead of ourselves, but overall, how do you think our college football playoff national championship picture has looked in your lifetime?
Well, I mean, you did a great summary there and described it perfectly, because this does go back to when I was probably in the first grade. One of my first memories, and I was in the Washington, D.C. area, and an NFL kid, because my dad was, a season ticket holder for the Redskins, not the Commanders. If you're from this modern era, they were the Washington Redskins and were a longtime franchise, but college football was just kind of an afterthought in that area. But I do remember one of my first memories of college football was the 1966 season, when it came down at the end of the year. And again, it was a variety of polls. I think they had three or four different ones, but Notre Dame was playing Michigan State in like the big showdown game of the year. And Alabama was also sitting undefeated down south, and I didn't really have that much knowledge of Bear, but and what he was doing in Alabama. But the bottom line is, Notre Dame at the end of that game, no overtime, of course, basically got the ball back at the end of the game in a 10-10 game and just basically ran the ball and the clock out to take the tie because Notre Dame was politically so set, Tony. They didn't need to win the game. If they just got a tie and were undefeated, they were still going to prevail. And Ara Parseghian's strategy was right because Notre Dame ended up being declared the national championship, which still sticks in the crawl of Alabama fans because they were undefeated that year. And Notre Dame had a tie and got the title.
Yes.
That's how long it's been screwed up. And it's been just a political deal. But of course, back in those days, there were no bowl tie-ins. The Bear Bryants of the world, the Ara Parseghians, they could pick and choose what bowl they wanted to go to based on their vacation plans. And, you know, so the system was really bad in the old days. Then, like you said, it started to improve a little bit when teams started to get tied into bowls and started playing significant games that were recognized as the games for the national championship. I attended the 1981 Sugar Bowl, Notre Dame and Georgia with Herschel Walker. They were the number one and number four teams. If Georgia could win, they were going to lock up the national championship, and that's what happened. But again, it wasn't organized until recent years, and that was pretty much by necessity because as college football grew, they had to have some kind of a system. But as you just highlighted, the systems have been laughable. I remember we used to call the BS. I did a Saturday morning show here locally and at one point said, let's just drop the C. It's just the BS system. And that's exactly what I kind of felt like. So it's going to be a brave new world and interested to talk to you about what your take is on not only the way we're going to determine a champion, but what college football is going to look like in these next couple of years, because I think we're moving closer and closer to the super conference setup. Which is more going to mimic pro football with two. We've got the American and National conferences in professional football. I think the Big Ten and the SEC are moving in that direction, and we might as well call it what it is. It's going to be the Fox League and the ESPN League, and TV is going to dictate everything.
I do think the intention to further it along and to make it more clerical, if you will, over the last, to say, since 1998 when the BCS came into play, I do think the intention has been good. And I do think we've always tried to figure out, you know, we had four teams, you're always looking at the fifth team, and we're always looking for mass chaos. This year we have, I think, nine teams that are still vying for one of those four positions.
Amazing.
And it's really made for great fodder. I mean, ever since the BCS started, it's given us something to talk about over the last two or three years. And I think it's interesting, in the last two, 3 weeks of the season, I know every single year about this time, sometime in mid-November, we're going to have an entire week of shows where we're talking about, well, what if this team beats this team and this team beats this team? And when Texas beat Alabama, Alabama wasn't the same team they were earlier in the season in week three. And should that play into it and strengthen the schedule, which I think is one of the biggest farces out there. There are about 16 different ways you can figure out what a strength and SOS is for a football team. Are you playing, is that team ranked at the time you play them? Are they ranked at the time at the end of the season? Because a team could be preseason number five and they end up not even being in the top 25. Were they really that good? I've always been of the preference that, hey, listen, they are what they are when you play them. That's what they are, and that should play into your strength of schedule. You can also look at wins and losses. There's so many different ways to do this, but ultimately we know that the strength of schedule and say the SEC is a lot different than it is in the ACC, and we know that changes from year to year. So I do think the intention has been good to kind of move it in that general direction. I will say this, and I was really trying to look beyond the top 12, because if you look at the BCS, it lasted 15 years. The CFP has lasted roughly 9 years. It will continue now with an expansion element to it. Will there be another opportunity to expand the college football playoff series, not so much in numbers, but in angles and in philosophy? And I do believe, like you just said, I think you bring up a great point, and something that Jay Barker, one of my old radio partners, brought up years ago, and he brought this up 11, 12 years ago. He really believed there was going to be four or five 16-team conferences, And each one of those particular conferences would either get their champion in and then maybe a wild card, and that's how you would have it. So you wouldn't even have to worry about the human element. Now, I like the subjective human element because I love having eyes on a game. I think you can tell a lot about a football team just by the eye test, and I think that's super, super important. One of the reasons that I think a lot of people had a difficult time with not having the human element was something out of the Pac-12. And you remember this 5, 10, 15 years ago, where you had the North and the South. And much like the SEC, where you have the East and the West, one side was always really good. The other side sucked. Do you remember when Missouri represented the East 3 years in a row and they were losing
all 50, too well?
They were losing 52-14 in the SEC championship game every single year because the East was just that bad. And you had that in the North and South. And we're like, are we really going to, in that 1 year, where we know it's possible. We've seen a 16 beat a one seed in the NCAA men's basketball bracket. What if one of those three or four lost North or South teams ends up winning the Pac-12 or ACC or anything else? Are we really going to give them a seat at the national championship table? And thank goodness it never came down to that point. So I do think there's going to be a lot of different ways we can look at this and cut this up. I do firmly believe, though, that I think the human element is important. I don't think it's been scientifically proven that we can be subjective enough. The whole recusal thing to me is the biggest joke. I know you've gone off on this, but the fact that the athletic director for Michigan must leave the room when they're going to vote on the Michigan Wolverines is the biggest joke, I think, out there. You can't recuse yourself when you're in a relationship. I think it's an absolute joke, but I do think it's really going to be interesting because, and I've talked to Mark Ingram, who, of course, is the athletic director for the UAB Blazers. He's as close to the behind the curtain, behind the Wizard of Oz of college football. Yeah. He's a super smart man. He was an AD up in Tennessee, played college football for years. He has told me that the tectonic plates of realignment and conference championship series football is not even close to being over yet. You can throw in your $30 million buyouts to the ACC or anywhere else, but a team's going to go where a team wants to go, where they know they're going to be not only promoted and branded so they can vie for a national championship, but certainly a place where they can call themselves a bed and a rest to perhaps win national championships at the highest level. So I think it's going to be really interesting in the future.
Yeah, and what we're going to see in terms of how the landscape is, because I mean, that was pretty innovative of Jay, if it was 10 or 11 years ago to kind of see that coming. But I think now, to alter Jay's vision, what I think really is going to happen, and we've already seen it, Tony, the Pac-12, which has been around for 110 years, in the space of about 72 hours, became the Pac-2. That's the kind of chaos we saw earlier this year with teams bolting to the Big Ten, then the scramble by the Big 12 and ACC to pick up the pieces more. This, if you want some definition of what we're going to see coming up, just consider this. Stanford and Cal Berkeley in Northern California and the Bay Area will be in the ACC next year, the Atlantic Coast Conference. Now, if that's not absurd, that those two teams are going to be playing in the ACC, that gives you a real good indication of what we're going to have going on. So that league is in trouble because their biggest members, Clemson and Florida State and North Carolina, are grumbling about the TV deal that they agreed to just 3 years ago with ESPN. It's a 12-year deal, and they're looking at what the SEC and Big Ten teams are getting, and they're far below that level. And to be competitive, that's where the rubber meets the road. The more money programs have, the more they're going to be able to hire the best coaches and pay the best NIL money and get the best players. So the ACC is in trouble. The Big 12 has done a remarkable job of scrambling and picking up a bunch of teams. But, you know, they're arguably right now positioned to be the number three conference. But with the Big 10 going national and picking up USC, UCLA, and, of course, the big gets this offseason were Washington and Oregon, who we see right in the mix. how strong would the Big Ten be right now if that was happening this year and those teams were Big Ten teams? No doubt. The SEC's got a hold serve. They, of course, got Oklahoma and Texas coming in next year. But don't think Greg Sankey's going to be sitting on his hands because he's eyeballing these disgruntled ACC teams.
Yep.
The landscape's going to continue to change. And I really like what you said about Mark Ingram's take that this is just the beginning of the major shift.
You know, it's interesting, too, because you brought up the rich get richer, and they do, and they have been. Certainly, when you don't use the philosophy of NIL or the transfer portal, it has backfired in some ways for, say, a Dabo Sweeney. He wants to grow from the inside out, and I understand his philosophy, and it came back to bite him in the first game of the year against a Duke that had 16 different players that were actually in the transfer portal. I'm not saying that if they played again this weekend that Clemson wouldn't run roughshod over Duke, because I think they're a totally different football team than they were early in the season. But you mentioned, you know, bringing in the best coaches. You know, there are only a handful, and this would be a great topic for another show. There's only a handful of great coaches out there that I really believe when they come into a program, they totally flip that program from a loser to a perennial winner. And you could even look at Penn State situation. Obviously, Coach Franklin, I'm not going to say he's a great coach because I've just seen his record against Ohio State and what he's done, and he just can't seem to get over the pile. Jim Harbaugh, of course, at Michigan, who's right now in the Final Four, more than likely going to be playing for a championship. Remember, I believe he started 0-5 or 0-6 against Ohio State. He was on the way out. He took a $1 million pay cut because he was going to get fired in Michigan. And obviously he has flipped that program around and more than likely a good shot at winning against Ohio State this weekend. That should be the game of the year. But then you look at a guy, say, like Jimbo Fisher, who, you know, was brought into a program that not only has more money than God, an A&M in the house that Johnny built, but they had every resource possible to win a national championship, coming from a guy who had already been there and done that. And now all of a sudden he's getting a $77 million buyout because he couldn't figure out how to get it done at A&M. So just because you bring in those great coaches and you know, we like to giggle at those things, right? I love it in Major League Baseball when someone's, you know, $100 million over the luxury tax and they end up being third in the National League Central. I love that because, you know, it's not always about the best players or the best coaches. It's certainly about the chemistry. I will say this, and I think this is interesting, and this is something that we've always tried to make things fair. You know, we always want to give Johnny, you know, he always plays right field for the Little League team. You know, he must play a couple of snaps or he must play a couple of balls in the right. We always want to make sure. That's why we give trophies to 4 and 5 and 6 year olds. We've been trying to, and I hate this word, parody. We have been trying to make parody go in college football for a long period of time. We were always under the belief that if you were a James Madison who got beat finally this past weekend against an Appalachian State. By the way, Appalachian State's an amazing football team. I don't care who they're playing or what they are. They will ruin your beautiful dream. You could be having the best wet dream out there and they will ruin it for you. They will come in and ruin it for you. Just ask Michigan years ago. They will come in and just turn you on your ear. But you had James Madison, and I know we had it with UCF several years ago. Hey, listen, we played our schedule. We won every game. We deserve to be at the table. No, you do not. You do not deserve to be at the table just because you won every game on your schedule. Just because you're 12-0, 13-0 doesn't mean you need to play with the big boys because you're in a group of five, because your schedule just isn't nearly as difficult as it is in the SEC, the ACC, or the Pac-12. And so I think the more we think to ourselves, okay, we're going to let them have a table. What we're doing here is we got Thanksgiving coming up in a couple of days. We're recording the show on a Tuesday. We're going to allow a couple of the 12 and 13 year olds that usually sit at the kids' table. We're going to let them come over and actually take a sip of the wine from the adult table and see how they play it out with the cranberries and the mashed potatoes. It's going to be interesting to see how some of those teams from the group of five conferences actually play. And, you know, we've seen it. Tulane Tulane would have gotten in last year. We saw Cincinnati finally get in. So we have sniffed that. We have dipped our toe in the shallow gene pool, if you will, to see how that works. And sometimes it does. We had the big argument over Boise State and Oklahoma years ago. Should Boise State ever get a chance? I always said Boise State can never be ranked no higher than third because we don't ever want to see them in a national championship. We saw them knock off the likes of an Oklahoma. So don't tell me they don't deserve to be there, but your strength of schedule certainly plays into that. And I think once we get past that parity part and we go, yeah, you can play, you can be in. Now you're going to have to win your conference and more than likely you're going to have to be undefeated to get a seat at that table. But if you do that, you do deserve to get in. We'll see how it plays out.
Yeah. And the new system, I know people are excited about it because it gets a lot more teams involved. Mm-hmm. The powers that be in college football are excited because they get a lot more television money. And let's cut to the chase, Tony. I say it all the time on my news and political show on your network and have consistently said it. There's no mysteries in the world. The old adage is true and everything. Follow the money and you find the motivation. That's what's happening right now in college football.
It is so true.
It's a very elementary formula, but it always applies. But here's the thing. Okay, we're going to go to the 12-team playoff next year, but that just means that the controversy is going to shift from who the third and fourth best teams are to who the 11th and 12th best teams are. And it's still a political process because people are involved. In theory, the current system is supposed to be outstanding because you're bringing in so-called experts on college football. But are they really experts, Tony? People that are athletic directors, and I really always appreciate hearing the perspective of Mark Ingram, your guy who you do a show with every week on TKR. I like hearing his perspective, but I mean, I would really like a candid assessment of some of his colleagues that have gotten on that committee, because I'm sure there's people there that are not really that qualified to make these decisions, because the process is supposed to be the quote eye test, where you watch the games and you get a feel for who the best teams are and you look at head-to-head matchups. But the other element that I think is very de-emphasized by these people as they go once a week to a resort in Dallas and eat, drink, and be stupid is what I like to say. While they're calling for their third steak and lobster meal of the weekend and having their third bottle of whatever they prefer, it's just a big party and all this recusal crap and things you just mentioned. They're interacting with this guy all the whole time. Now he might have to leave the room in the deliberation, but you don't think they're working each other for angles for their conferences and their teams? I've been to thousands of conventions and meetings and things, and there's always those hallway conversations going on. So the process is not going to be theoretically any better. Let me interject this right now and say if analytics, which is such a big part of everything now, you get these massive reports and these people have that before them, because that's the other thing they're supposed to look at are the sheer numbers. Case Kiefer out in Las Vegas last year was apoplectic when the playoff pairings were announced for last year's Final Four, because you remember we had two undefeated teams, Georgia and Michigan, that were absolute locks to get in. And then about nine teams were all about equally qualified for the third and fourth spot and ended up going to TCU, despite the fact they had lost their conference championship game and had a questionable strength of schedule. And it went to Ohio State, who had been blown out by Michigan and had a one loss. But those teams got in. But what really made him be protesting the situation was the way they seeded the teams, which is just as important. Georgia was one, Michigan was two, but then they put TCU third despite coming off a loss to Kansas State and put Ohio State fourth just to avoid the Ohio State Michigan game. And there's no other reason to do that, because Case said throughout the year, all the computer printouts, all of the analytics said there are three dominant teams in college football.
Yep.
And those three teams were Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State. And he said the gulf to all the rest of them by the sheer numbers was monumentally large. So even though Michigan beat Ohio State and on the field has to count, but he said from a power rating standpoint, which they're supposed to be considering, those were the three best teams. Alabama didn't even get in because they had a second loss. So they have nobody to cry to. But the point was the matchup in the first round, if TCU got in, they were by far below the other teams and should have been the four seed. That's who Georgia should have played. Instead, Georgia had to play Ohio State, who all year long was the other dominant team in that group. So the way it was even seeded was political last year because there is a lot of old school bias for the Big Ten, and they did not want Ohio State and Michigan to play in the first round. So it is still very political, and I'm not so sure even with 12 teams, it's not going to continue to be that way.
You are spot on. You are so spot on because, and I do remember thinking that as a college football fan, I did not want to see a rematch again. And so I was happy they did that. But was it the right thing to do? No, absolutely not. Because you did have your top three teams, and we by far knew they were the best football teams out there. You know, this is not the NIT. This is not an invitational. The NIT.
Exactly.
The NIT is created as a basketball tournament for teams that didn't make it into March Madness. And that's where you can have an opportunity where you may have an Alabama play a UAB. Ooh, this would be a great opportunity to finally play these teams, or maybe a coach from one school that used to coach at this school. They can actually, yeah. You can put those together. It's called an invitational for a reason. But when you're talking about the sheer numbers and the subjectivity of it, when it comes to the human element, it's gotta be right. And if that means that Michigan, Ohio State has to play again, so be it. That should be because it affects all four teams. I do think, you know, certainly with our 12 teams, are you going to have a team that may be ninth or eighth or seventh and has already played a team that is second, third, or fourth? Will you see them move ever so briefly the final week of the year, despite the fact that both teams won, just so we don't have a rematch? You can almost unequivocally say yes, that's going to probably happen.
Yeah, of course.
Is it good for college football and college football fans to make sure that happens so we have a different matchup? Yes, but is it the right thing to do? Are we going to do it right and use, like you said, the analytical aspect of this formula to make sure that the right teams are getting a chance? Because it does affect everyone else in the college football playoff series. And I think it's going to be super exciting. I will say this, and I know we're talking about college football. I do think the expansion of college football is also going to play into the expansion of men's March Madness, which I think is going to be just one of the wonderful things. If you look at the NHL, the NBA, you look at Major League Baseball, the NFL, and the percentage of teams that actually get into playoff systems, normally it's somewhere between 20 and 35% of all teams get in. In college basketball, you're talking 68 teams or 69 teams of the playing game out of a possible 370 something basketball teams. It's the least number of teams to get in any playoff scenario. And I know that Mark's talked about this as well. And this is going to be something that's going to happen, but I think you're going to see March Madness actually double. You're only talking about adding one more game. You're going to have to win seven games instead of six. But I think that's going to be something that once this 12 team playoff gets going and hunky dory and everyone's happy about how it's going and the TV money's coming in and we're getting the extra game, I do think that's going to probably be another thing that we're going to see, because that is the major moneymaker for college basketball. And I think adding that one game will only make that system better too.
Yeah, I agree with that. And you may as well expand that field, because the Cinderella aspect of that is, yep. You know, that for basketball is always the look at last year's tournament. Ridiculous how many lower seeds made the Final Four. Mm-hmm. So in basketball is a tournament sport. Let's face it. And it's just a perfect model for that. I did want to go back to the football example. And here's the danger in human interaction and trying to avoid matchups and engineering things that should not be done. Let's face it, Tony, last year, nobody can argue the Georgia-Ohio State game was by far the game of the playoffs. It was the game for the national championship. Yep. And when you tinker with the formula and put the two best teams of the four, the analytics screamed that Georgia and Ohio State were superior to Michigan and TCU, yet they matched up those two teams in the first round. The danger of doing that, yes, we had an epic game. Georgia ended up winning by 2 points and beat Ohio State in a great game. But then you get the worst championship matchup imaginable. Georgia 65, TCU 7. Mm-hmm. That engineering of making that palatable to the committee end up creating a dog of a championship game, and you do that a couple of times, and you start to spoil your grand event because people know it's a joke. 65-7 in a championship game, that was just absurd.
Yeah.
The quote of the year last year, and we use it all the time on some of our other shows, but running on the field when Sonny Dykes, the coach of TCU, says, "I'm really excited about this. I think we really match up well with Georgia." My comment was, "Well, the French Army thought they matched up with Hitler pretty good. It didn't work out very well."
Yeah, there was no matchup there. They may have matched up on the bus or maybe at the concession stand, but on the football field, there was no matchup at all. Hey, the Kiefer and Curry Show, taking the world by storm. Of course, you can hear it every single day of the week right here on the TKR app. Thanks to the 100,000 folks who download the app and listen to the show every Monday through Friday right here on TKR. Of course, you can also hear Need to Know. Kip, he's into so many other things. I don't even know what else. He's doing shows with Terry Quillian. He's doing national programs. He's all over the place, traveling the world abroad. Of course, we do the Kiefer and Curry Show. We're going to be doing our ABC 3340 show. Just because college football is coming to an end doesn't mean our show is going to be coming to an end. We're going to be on every Saturday morning from 10:30 to 11 o'clock. Our shows, our picks have been just absolutely wonderful. And thanks, of course, to the legend and Terry Quillian and Case Kiefer doing a fantastic job. And also the people, Tracy and everyone in Ashland who have been, Monty, have been a big part of our success on ABC 3340. We're also going to be doing a show, and I know it's coming down the road, but if you're looking for something, your official Boxing Day show on December 26th.
Yes.
We're going to be doing a show on Talk 99.5. This is going to be incredibly bittersweet for me because I worked in those hallowed halls for over 30 years, and I know you fill in and do a wonderful job for Leland, and certainly I don't take that lightly when people invite people to come in to fill in for really good personalities. That speaks highly of Kip Kiefer. So we're going to be looking forward to doing that show. They're going to give us the unadulterated 4-hour program coming up on the 26th. And we're going to bite on that. That should be fun. So we're all over the place. So continue to listen up and make sure you check out our TV show, ABC 3340, again on Saturday morning. Till next week, my friend, get after it. I know you'll be watching the CFP this week.
Oh, man, can't wait for rivalry week. This is as good as it gets. Food, family, fun. Fellowship and football. It's probably the best weekend of the year.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.